Coach, defense is important, but a team also has to score to win. You can have the best defense in the world, but without an offense to match, you won't be winning any championships. Just have a look at what happened during March Madness this year. Three out of four teams that made it to the Final Four on both the women's and men's side were the top three offensive-ranked teams. That's no coincidence. The reality is most coaches will win more games with a 15% improvement on offense. But how? We're bringing in one of the greatest offensive minds in the game and Read and React creator, Coach Rick Torbett, to help answer that question. On May 9th, Rick and I will kick off our four-week offensive strategies track where we will teach coaches how to score 7 to 10 more points per game. Just head to pgccoaching.com/tracks to learn more.
Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, TJ and Sam dive into the details of what will make your offense work this season. They discuss spacing, screening angles, timing, assessing different offensive strategies for your team, and much more. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Hardwood Hustle. We are going to talk offense today. Specifically, we're going to talk about execution. You know, I think one of the things that really gets overlooked on the offensive end of the ball is really the little things that make your offense go. And me personally, been around a lot of different offensive coaches that are really well. I don't think it's just the X's and O's, and I think we spend probably an inordinate amount of time on that, but it's actually the little things that they do to make it run well. You know, I just got done speaking at Ohio State Coaches Association. I was watching a couple different people speak, and you know, the Indiana Pacers assistant was talking about this, and he did a great job, just all the little screening angles and how things are being adjusted, and you know, the angles in which Steph comes off, and how important the angles are of the screens. And you know, I'm sure for some people it just seemed too nuanced, and it was like, oh, you know, gosh, I'm just trying to get him in the right system or whatever. But you can have them in a particular system, and if they don't understand the little things that are important to make that system go well, it's probably going to be one of those situations where, you know, you're a couple months in, you're like, oh, never mind, let me change offenses, this one isn't working. But I think so many times the magic is in the details, Sam. I really just feel like the best coaches I've ever been around, they take care of those little things and they take their offense to another level because they're able to teach the little things really well.
Well, I'm curious to hear, I would agree with that statement on the surface, TJ, but I don't know, we'll get into the specifics. I agree with that. And I played for a high school coach who I learned this at an early age as a player, how attention to detail he was. And as a point guard, when we were running set plays and going on air and then live, like I learned a lot about the importance of attention to detail as a young player from my high school coach. Now, I say that, and then I'll throw it back to you. I'm detail-oriented, but when it comes to offense, there's like some really big-picture stuff that I don't want to be too detailed on. I can go deeper on that. So I'm curious what you mean by like why details matter in terms of offense.
Well, I think, you know, particularly like just give you a situation where, you know, we'll set a side ball screen for our best player. And I think a lot of coaches stop there. Like, here, this is a side ball screen. We got our best player. We're getting him a little bit of an advantage. But we also know that the side ball screen is guarded so many different ways, right? I mean, are they going to ice it? Are they going to double it? Are they going to hedge it? Are they going to catch it? Are they going to, you know, like there's so many different ways. And so if, you know, you're taking care of the little things, like your players have to have answers to all of those questions. And even starting before they have the answers, like, is the screen any good? Did the screen come at a good angle? Did they sprint into the screen so the defense is playing catch up, or did they walk into it where the defense is able to communicate easily and get through it? Like, I just think that I could come up with probably 15 different details that matter in the ball screen. And I wonder sometimes even if it's worth it sometimes at certain level of basketball, because there's so many nuances that go into it. I'm sure you can get away with a ball screen with 8 and 9 year olds. And we do that a lot, which I don't think is a good idea because they don't have the number of coverages. They haven't spent that much time going in depth, but over the course of a season, even a high school team is going to see different teams guard the side ball screen different ways. So you have to have answers for that. And so, you know, the details of what your team needs to do, but also the details of having the answers for how the other team's actually going to approach that and try and take that away. Because I think the idea of just, oh, let's set a side ball screen, where I think a lot of people stop, that's not going to work against certain teams. It's not going to work against the best teams you play. They're going to change coverages, or they're going to have a really good defense in their coverage. Or, you know, what if you set a ball screen for your best player because you want him to be freed up or her to be freed up, but they double it the entire game and take the player out of it, right? Like, those are things that I think that are not thought through enough. And then all of a sudden you set the side ball screen and it doesn't work. And then in the third game, it doesn't work. And then you're like, nah, never mind. Let's go to a different tactic.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I agree. Like, to expand on that for a minute, little things like spacing matter a lot, right? Sometimes players start creeping on the field instead of staying disciplined in the corner, right? And so when a player creeps, TJ, instead of there being 15 feet of spacing, now there's 10 feet of spacing. And that 5 feet less of spacing matters a lot when you're trying to beat that on-ball defender. And I think a lot of younger players, and sometimes even, you know, more mature players, don't understand the devil and the details of a spacing. Or, hey, we're going to always use this example with players. When a coach asks you to set a screen down on the block and you want a player to curl off that, and you don't pay attention to the huddle, and you end up setting that screen a foot off the block. And now when the player curls, instead of them curling for a little 5 foot layup or a 5 foot jumper, now they're shooting a 12 foot jumper. Well, that's the difference in winning and losing. There's a detail of, okay, are we sprinting the floor in transition on offense, or are we running the floor? That's a small detail, but there's a big difference in what happens. And I did a film study on Ashland University. They just won, TJ, the Division II Women's National Championship. And when I watch them on film, they are so good at feeding the post. Like, they play through the post, which you don't see teams do that. And why are they so good? Two reasons that stood out to me. Their post players understand how to position and hold seals. And guess who else knows what to do? The passer knows how to feed the post. Those are two small details that they obviously work a lot on, and that's why they're so successful. But most coaches don't teach those details.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example. I mean, post feed, I mean, our team, like, we're average at best, you know, at doing that and playing out of the post. And why are we average at best? I think we do average teaching at best. Like, we don't spend most of our time there. And eventually, you know, guards get fearful of throwing it in there because they're afraid if I turn it over, it's going to hurt the team, or if I turn it over, it's going to be trouble. But in reality, like, we haven't spent enough time on how to feed the post. One, because it's not our highest priority. But if we're going to do it at all, we need to spend some time on it. And, you know, going back to the ball screen analogy, and not that I'm advocating for ball screens, it's just an easy one to break down. Same with me in doing film breakdown on different teams. You know, like, you know, Gonzaga and Baylor are really good in the ball screen. Everybody's running them in college basketball. Those two teams, I think, are really good at them. And I think they're different for they're good for different reasons. Like, when I watch Baylor run the ball screens, you know, that raise man who's not even in the ball screen is always above the free throw line, which puts the help defender in a really bad pinch. They raise up so high and so hard that it makes the read that much easier. You know, I think a second reason that they're really good at that is they sprint into every ball screen. So the defense is always trailing. It's harder to hedge and harder to double, and they get more consistent reads because their post players absolutely sprint as hard as they can into a ball screen. You know, and so, again, there's just another example of the details. You know, Gonzaga is really good in the ball screen because Timmy is so good at reading the roll. He short rolls, he full rolls, he pops. Like, he just reads the defender and the help, and he rolls to the just really good spots every single time that puts the other team in a pinch. So they're good for different reasons, but they're really good at their details. And you can watch a lot of, you know, ball screen, and the roll just does what they're supposed to do. The lift man, sometimes early, sometimes late, whatever. And they don't get as clean of looks as somebody like Baylor or Gonzaga because those little details just aren't taught as well. I mean, I'm not in their practices, so I don't know, but it just doesn't look as crisp as those two teams running it or as precise because they haven't maybe spent as much time on the details. Just like my team wouldn't look as good feeding the post as Ashland Women because I haven't spent as much time on that.
Yeah, which you can only be good at or great at just a few things. You can't be great at everything. I do think the attention to the detail, there's good and the bad with it. What I mean is the good is when you're really detailed and you give players specific coaching, over the long term, it's actually going to free them up to be more successful. It's going to give them freedom to explore and be a little creative, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm making sense when I say that, but when your attention to detail is so good and they know those, it does give them freedom. Now, the early process of that is can be ugly, meaning, you know, this first thing that came to mind, Justin Fields recently made comments, TJ, quarterback for Chicago Bears, where he was a little bit critical of the coaching and saying like he's bogged down and feels robotic. And I say that to say sometimes when you got high attention to detail, a player is going to feel robotic because it's not natural yet. And that could be the pitfall of over detail. So that's the art of coaching is how do we layer in details and not overwhelm players? And so I think that's where you have to be aware of that as a coach with your players.
Yeah. And I, you know, everybody's got a different process to that. I think, you know, our process has generally been getting really good at knowing what to do and where you should be. Right. And during that process, like you alluded to, we might be slower because we're thinking so much about doing exactly what coach wanted me to do. Now, once we know exactly what coach wants us to do, now you're going to be able to take more liberties and make more decisions to adapt that, you know. I'm just going to stay on the same scenario for clarity. But, you know, when we come off a ball screen and we have a raised man and we have two people on the other side, that person in the corner, we love for them to backdoor. And, you know, I don't know if my players can figure it out, but some of those people backdoor to clear space. And sometimes they run into the ball screen. Oftentimes they don't get the layup. But then we have a couple of guys that are really good at it. And they get all kinds of backdoor cut layups off the ball screen and offensive rebounds off the ball screen. Why? Because they're not just doing what coach told them to do. They're now learning the little nuances, like reading their defender. When your defender turns his head to help on the ball screen, back cut him. Mm-hmm. You know, and so they've got little details like that. Now they always seem to be open, where the other guys never seem to be open. And it's not the other guy's fault. I mean, they got to grow into it. But they're just trying to please me, but they haven't got to the little nuances of, okay, here's when I go. This is when I'll be open. This is when the point guard or the guard coming off's eyes are going to be up at the rim and I'll be available to get a catch. This is when those little things right there is the difference between just doing what coach asked and being able to play. But oftentimes you're right, Sam, you go backwards before you go forward. You know, you don't get to that place where there's so many details, so many little things that you do actually get slower. And I think that's hard for players to understand. Sometimes the progress is backwards before it's forward. But that's the best way we found to do it, is to just get the actual strategy right and do what you're supposed to do. And then once you know that like the back of your hand, now let's get into the nuances. Now let's get into the adjustments. Now let's get into the little details that are actually going to make this work.
Yeah. Another small detail, Mike Neighbors does this, you know, he's spoken to a lot of our clinics. We need to get Mike back on the podcast, but he has coached teams that led the country for like 7 or 8 straight years. When you took his teams from Washington to Arkansas, they had the lowest turnover rate in the country. And one thing Mike is really good at offense is finding out what loses games. What causes turnovers? Okay, how do we eliminate that? Here's one example. What happens when a player cuts backdoor? How many turnovers happen on backdoor cuts? I think, let's say there's 2 turnovers a game. Because what happens? They do the squirrel thing. What's a squirrel do when it runs out in the road and you're driving? It goes back and forth. A squirrel doesn't commit. A deer commits. So Mike said anytime in their offense that a player starts to cut back door, they are not allowed to pop back out. They have to finish their cut all the way to the rim. That little detail, TJ, it leads to less turnovers. It may not lead to more points, but it leads to less turnovers. Less turnovers mean we get a shot on goal. If you cut those by two a game, we're getting two more shots. If we just make one of those two shots, then, you know, there's 2 or 3 points. That matters a lot in close games.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those are – it's a great example of, like, little things mattering. I've got another little couple of things that I think are important in the little details. Happy to go down to any of these angles. But one is, like, pace. You know, the teams that are hardest to guard, they're pretty seamless, you know, in their transition. They go seamlessly into whatever they're trying to do on the offensive end, and they play at a pace that's hard to guard, you know, versus a team that, like, okay, transition's not there. Now let's call the play. Now let's whatever, you know, and you're getting adjusted. The teams that I feel like are the hardest to guard have the best pace. And I don't mean they play the fastest. I just mean that they don't, you know, block it. They don't just come in and say, let's do this. Okay, now let's reset and do this. Okay, now let's reset and do this. They just play with a really tough pace where it's like they don't let you off the hook defensively. And so I think that's a little nuance that can make your offense a lot better. I think screening angles are really important. I was listening to the Pacers guy, like I was talking about, and he was just talking about how, you know, so many of our screening angles in the past have been to get a guy to the perimeter open. And if you see a lot of screens that are set for Steph, they're with their back to the basket so that Steph can either go at a straight line as fast as he possibly wants to the rim, or he can take the defender below the screen and go the other direction. And so he's got both options versus just one option where it might be, you know, to get open on the perimeter. So I think screening angles really matter. I think spacing, according to where everybody is at, is something the NBA does a phenomenal job at. But I think that that's really important. And spacing looks different for everybody. With a team that can shoot the ball really well, you know, that spacing might be as wide as the floor can get. To a team that doesn't shoot the ball quite as well, you know, do you have players in places that can be dangerous? Like, are they in spots where they can actually score the ball? That might be better spacing for them. You know, I think that's another really important, like, little nuance in the offense. You know, I think, you know, a fourth one, which is probably the hardest to teach, is – you know, players actually being able to read different screens or different back cuts or different, like, what are they looking for? Well, on a back cut, I'm looking for the back of the head. Well, on a down screen, I'm looking for reading the defender. Are they over? Are they under? Are they trailing? Are they whatever? Like, that's a more nuanced and takes a lot more teaching. But I think it's another really important angle. Why is this screen being set? What are my options off this screen? And what am I looking for to make this actually a successful screen rather than just setting another screen to be setting another screen?
So what's your take on, like, where's the line of demarcate? When is too much detail too much? When's not enough detail? And I know I'm asking a question that has a lot of gray in there, and it probably depends on age and stage you coach, and even on your own team. Like, hey, KJ can handle a whole lot of detail. This other player, no, they're not capacity mentally there yet, right? So, yeah. Like, how do you think about that?
Well, I think about it like this. I think that goes a lot into role identification. You know, I said a second ago that there's times early in the season and preseason specifically when our team will be slow because we're thinking a lot, right? I'm okay with that as we're building up, but I don't want my team to be slow in a game. And so I've got to think about, what do I need to do to get them fast in a game? And for some people, that means, you know, on a particular screen, KJ has 5 options. On another thing, well, it's game time. This player's thinking too much. Let me just give them 1 option. So it might say, hey, every time we're in split action, just cut hard to the back to the rim. Just do that every time. So look, that might work out 3 out of 10 times, but it might be a better decision than to say, we'll just keep reading it. And then we have 2 turnovers and we have a couple bad shots and we do whatever. And so I think really just narrowing the focus for players that are overthinking and leaving it broad for the players that aren't thinking because they've gotten to that level of execution. But many times we lump all players together and all 5 players have to be able to read a down screen and the person passing the ball needs to be able to read the cutter. And we go through, you know, like all of those things that can lead to slow feet. So I'm really conscious to make sure when we get close to games that if I have to narrow the focus for somebody, make sure it gets done so that they can play fast in a game.
Yeah, because, you know, back to an earlier show, slow meat is slow feet.
Right, exactly. And I've heard about that many a times from people.
I think one of our longtime listeners, Chris Guandolini, is going to make us another shirt there. Chris, if you're listening, we're excited to see that iteration you bring out. So on attention to detail, it really is. I mean, if you fast forward to the end of a game, fast forward to the end of the season, usually the margin of detail is so small across any sport. Think about a football game where it comes down to a kick. Can you snap the ball? Can you hold the ball? Can the kicker execute the kick? In basketball, do you execute the half court set late game when it's tied or down by one, or we need a three? You know, we talked recently, or we're talking about Tony Bennett's run at our leadership clinics right now, TJ, and you think about their run to the national championship. They won three or four games on the last shot or the last moment. So basketball is a game of detail. So I say that to say, any coaches listening, that's why it matters. And the more you can get your players to buy into it, then the more success. Because it doesn't matter if we as coaches believe it. It only matters what our players believe, really.
Yeah. And I think really it comes down to clarity for you as a coach and then your ability to build their habits. You know, do they have the habits that are going to be successful come game time? Because they're going to fall back to their most deeply held habits. And so are those things that have been ingrained in them, I think, is a really, really important thing to think about. And even to the point of, what are my top three or four habits that I want each individual player to have? Because it's hard to be great at 20 habits, right? So what are the ones that I want them to be really good at where I didn't spread it so thin where they're average at all of these habits? Because most good offenses too, you know, they possess this. They know exactly what they're hunting, right? Like, they're not just guessing. I might get a mid-range this time, a three this time, a flare screen this time, or whatever. Like, they're just really good at hunting what they want. And their offense leads to hunting those types of shots. You know, they've built it around generating the shots that they're hunting. So I do think we as coaches are responsible for that. You know, I think about what I call the three TIONs. You know, do they have good role identification? Do they have good shot generation? And do they take good shot selection? Right. And we are responsible for that and helping our players to get those three things right. If they don't know their role, that's our fault. Right. And if we don't have an offense that generates shots that we're hunting, that's our fault. And then if they're taking really bad shots, we often blame them for that. But I think we actually are responsible for holding that accountable every day in practice. And those are things that I think are also little nuanced things that, you know, we might be great at shot generation, but we haven't spent any time on shot selection. And so even though we've got good shots, they're passing up good ones and taking bad ones. You know, that happens all the time. Another thing that I think about, Sam, too, is like, you know, what does the teaching look like for this? And, you know, at PGC, we all the time, you know, hear it, see it, do it. And I've done that with my players too. You know, I talk to them about why we're going to do something on offense. And we go out there and we do it. And then the next practice, I might actually show it to them on film. Let's just say we're going to run pistol action, take some NBA clips or college clips of people running pistol action. And it's really funny. No matter how much I try and introduce it exactly like they do it, a light bulb goes off when they see somebody else do it, right? Like, they all of a sudden, oh, okay. And then I think there's a third level to that. So we've worked on it. Now they've seen it. We go back and do it again. And the third one is like, even though they've seen the big picture, most of them haven't seen enough film, aren't basketball knowledge enough to know what are actually the details, like we talked about earlier, that are making that work. So now all of a sudden they catch the pass in the right place and they screen at the right place, but they don't understand that, you know, if I angle this screen 45 degrees different, I'm going to get more out of it. And so that's where we got to go back and teach the little details that they don't tie together. This is why it's successful.
Yeah. And another thing that triggered listening to you, so much of offensive execution boils down to this detail. When you catch the ball, do you peek at the rim? Like, do you peek immediately? And we show this at our summer sessions, right, of college pro players. Like, they peaked a second late and that cutter was open, and now they're not open, but they're going to throw the pass late and it either gets stolen or deflected out of bounds because the player who was making the pass didn't have the attention to detail to peek at the rim and have court vision. Like, that matters a lot. Or I see this at younger levels. A player sees the player open. Their vision is there, but the ball placement in their hands is not correct, meaning they're holding it down, what we call pregnant position. They're like holding it by their belly button, and they need to deliver a pass from the shoulder. And the time it takes them to raise the ball up to the shoulder and make a pass, what we might call a pistol pass, like it's too late because they don't understand the attention to detail and where they hold the ball or being shot ready on the catch. They think about shooting after the catch. Like, these are all skill-based habits and attention to detail that at every level, every single level, players make these mistakes. Obviously, at the younger levels, you're going to see more of them. But I see it at the most advanced players, like, sometimes lack that attention to detail, or they don't know how to run their man off the ball screen or off the screen, and they have all the skill, but they don't have the knowledge, and they're not going to be successful consistently.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot packed in there. I mean, just thinking about ball screens, like, is the player any good at setting the ball screen angle up? And then, you know, we've touched on 10 things that have got to go right in the ball screen to actually make it effective. You know, and you know, another thing that I think about is on top of like all those habits that you talked about, like, you could have them in all the right stuff, but they don't actually have the habits to hit the person on the back door. It can all just break down on that. I think another important thing for coaches to be aware of is, the more your offense is based on timing, like, the more important these things are going to be. And I think offenses that are based on timing are the hardest to guard, but they're also the hardest to teach and the hardest to get good at because they require more good habits. You know, the player's going to have the ball in a place they can pass it. They're going to have to know what reads they're going through. The people actually setting up the reads are going to have to make the right angle, right? That's harder than, I would say, something like the dribble drive, where we're basing most of the things off the dribble and they have a certain number of habits. So I think, an action or guarding a bunch of split action into ball screens with double-sided action, I think that's way harder to guard. But you also have to keep in mind it's way harder to teach. And so there's trade-offs in both of those scenarios. And I think you have to be conscious. You can't just go from a simple offense where players don't have to think a lot and you're trying to win it off something like just beating people off the dribble to all of a sudden now we're trying to combo actions to get advantages. And there's a lot more teaching that goes into that because you're teaching thought process, you're teaching flow, you're teaching pace, you're teaching angles. There's just so many things that you have to teach. And if you're not prepared to teach those, there's a good chance. I see this happen every year. I'm going to run this offense. And then a few weeks in, you're like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. And then you switch thinking that it's the strategy or the tactic when oftentimes it's really just the details that you need to be teaching better.
Yeah, like a passing game or a timing. You're right. I love that point. Like, running a set play is often timing. And so understanding if, like, point guard passes to the wing, is cutting to the weak side, going to get a ball reversal, and then there's some cross-screen action, cross-screen down. Like, the timing of the screen, the timing of the catch all matter in a motion-based offense. Whereas, to your point earlier, if you're a drive and kick offense, that's not as important. Your detail would be in being shot ready, spacing, that type of thing. I was watching another football analogy. I was watching the Falcons game yesterday, and I thought their quarterback made a really poor throw. Like, he overthrew Kyle Pitts, who's a generational tight end talent. And he was like, man, that's a horrible – I said, that was a horrible throw just on my first glance. Then I saw the replay. Guess what? Kyle Pitts didn't make his break. He made his break and he kind of jogged the first couple steps. He didn't sprint. And the quarterback was expecting him to sprint. So the timing was off. The naked eye would tell you, oh, that's a horrible play by the quarterback. In reality, his receiver did not run the route with the right timing and sprinting. And I think this happens in basketball. We sometimes see it from a fan perspective and you think, oh, horrible decision. They shouldn't have thrown that advance pass. The point guard made a bad play. No, the post player that was rim running did not full sprint, and yeah, they slowed their sprint up. And that's where those details do matter.
Yeah. You know, I think, finally, you know, sometimes less is more, because there's, even in less, there's a lot to teach. And we can oftentimes just think that, well, if I change this offense or add more to it, it's going to get better. I've made that mistake 1,000 times, where in reality, it just might be simplifying it, teaching more specificity, building better habits. You know, all of those things might actually make it, and they would make any offense run better. And that's another thing we're going to have to decide as coaches, is how much are we going to add? How much are we going to spend on the details? How much are we going to get good at the little things? And it's an important decision for coaches to have to make. And Sam, I'm excited to hear what our coaches think are some other good little nuances that needed to be added. So if you would, hey, hit us up on Twitter and let us know at @Hardwood_hustle. Like, what are some things that you think are essential to running good offense? What are some of the little things that you're teaching that makes your offense run well? Really would be excited to hear those, just selfishly, because I'm sure there's a lot of little things that we could talk about that, you know, coaches have run into and they've seen. So hit us up, share those thoughts with us. And he is Sam. I am TJ. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. If you're interested in one of our coaching clinics, diving into one of our coaching tracks, or simply joining our PGC coaching community, go to pgccoaching.com to find the support you've been looking for in all aspects of your coaching. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.